You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Coming. Our storm. And when it arrives, it will shake the universe.
So much for joining me here this Sunday evening. It is November 25th, 2018. I hope all of you are doing well. Thanks so much for being part of RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Please do check out RenegadeTribune.com and go on over to HeathenHerbs.com. I've got an old friend with me here. His name is Drew. Luckily, I'm able to be joined by him here tonight. And before we get started, Drew, give a testimonial for the cooling salve, which was formulated by yours truly. I brought up Heathen Herbs. You've been a little sore.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You like it? So the Heathen Herbs cooling salve, it's really good. I'm not a big, like...
Icy Hot?
Icy Hot or...
Benjamin Gay?
Benjamin Gay, yeah. Or even like a Vicks Vapor Rub. I always kind of... stayed away from those products. I don't know. It didn't seem very appealing. They were always seemed to have like this weird chemical smell to them.
Yeah.
But I'm really liking the Heathen Herbs cooling salve. I've been using it on my neck and shoulders. Been doing a lot of work like this past week. Kind of sore. So yeah.
Salvation from the salve.
Oh yeah.
I love it. I use it every day. I really do. But this isn't an infomercial here tonight.
Yeah. I wasn't paid for this. But I guess I do have to disclose. I did get the product for free, but I'll say like from in the past day, I've used it 3 times, so I'm really liking it.
Yeah, it's always better when you get the product for free. It always feels that much better.
Definitely helps.
So, Drew, recently there was Thanksgiving, and I didn't pay much attention to what the news was putting out, just general media culture, Facebook, I don't have it. But from what I heard from you, there was an over-the-top push for basically anti-white racism.
Yeah, I mean, the headlines, and there's been a couple people I've seen on Twitter that just put together like a collage of headlines detailing all of these, you know, news stories about, you know, racist family members on Thanksgiving, what to do, and it's just kind of over the top push, you know, against, I don't know, just can we just enjoy the holiday for, you know, what it is? I don't know.
No, because this holiday is inherently about genociding those poor, poor Indians. By the way, yeah. I knew the Wampanoags, who were supposedly the ones involved with Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. They're still around today.
Yeah.
They're still doing all right. I mean, they're a little bit perturbed that they don't really have their land and their culture, but some of them seem to be quite happy with the casino money that's coming in.
Yeah.
But I don't blame them. I don't blame them for being a little bit resentful of losing their land and their way of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like it either. But does it mean that whites need to be blamed now for that and that we need to give up our entire destiny because of some historical wrongs that supposedly occurred when it wasn't just one-sided? I have ancestors who lost many loved ones to Indian attacks. Because my ancestors have been in this country, at least quite a few of them, for a long, long time. Even my Irish ones, they didn't come over just because of the potato genocide.
Yeah.
They were here for a long time. But even if they were just recent arrivals, it does not give the justification to ethnically cleanse, to genocide white people from this country now. It's collective punishment through the ages, and it should never be justified. But that's what's going on. And unfortunately, a lot of white people don't seem to have the tools or the knowledge base to be able to counter, or the spine, to be able to counteract the narrative that's being put out. I mean, did you see any resistance to this?
Yeah, I mean, there was a few, I guess, articles that I saw, you know, kind of pushing back or like taking a more honest look at the holiday rather than this sensationalized, like, you know, Thanksgiving's bad. Basically, like, the premise, I guess, they were trying to get out was like, Thanksgiving's bad. It's based on, you know, oppression and colonialism. And you need to tell your Trump-loving family member on the holiday that they're wrong, and you need to, like, resist, you know, like, rise up, hashtag rise above or whatever, you know, like, just this over-the-top, you know, message that they're trying to get out. And kind of, to me, it's like, I'm not a big holiday person. I've never been real big on, like, seeing the importance of holidays. I don't have that, like, sentimental kind of feeling about it.
Yeah, especially not the state holidays. People always know when those fall because they get their day off of work.
My day off.
I've never had that kind of job where you get that day off. So yes. I've never cared whatsoever about them. But I hear you on these holidays. It's I have some fond memories of some of these holidays, like Thanksgiving, Christmas. But especially these days, I've become so detached from them. I don't get the old holiday cheer simply because the culture surrounding them is so materialistic and so very Jewish.
Yeah, very very consumeristic, you know, type of holiday. Thanksgiving is kind of like, well, Thanksgiving you get fat, and Christmas you get fat, and also give presents and you get stuff. Like, that's America.
Well, actually,
like,
think about
that's
it.
That's how we celebrate those holidays.
The fall holidays really start with Halloween. What do you get in Halloween?
Lots of candy.
So much candy.
Let's go on a sugar binge and let's, like, eat a lot of food.
I wonder why people are getting so sick. I think the flu season is partially engineered.
Yeah, that's...
And perhaps part of it...
could be all this candy.
And think about where people get a lot of this candy. They'll sell it right in the CVS or the pharmacies.
Mm-hmm.
They have all this candy right up front. The place where you then have to go when you get sick.
Oh, that's interesting.
If you're eating like crap during the time... when there is not as much sun, and you're not able to get as much sun simply because you're bundling up more, you're not getting all that vitamin D naturally. And vitamin D has actually been shown in scientific studies, particularly one I'm thinking about that I posted about from Japan, where vitamin D is far more effective than vaccines, antivirals. And think about that. You don't want to get a cold. You get sunshine. Go get sunshine. And so people aren't, you know, adding this up. There's also another theory that you're not getting enough fresh air. Because during the winter, people close their windows and they turn on the ovens and things where you're going to be getting a lot of fumes inside your house that you're breathing over and over. Not very good circulation. So that could be a factor as well. But the overall health that people have during these times, they don't go out and exercise. They're not going on a lot of brisk walks. That's one of the things I did like about the holidays. I did a lot of walking and hiking. You know, when we get together with some of these holidays, it would have that element of a little bit of exercise to them, and that's so important. If people are just shut up inside eating junk food for a couple months, you're going to get really sick, and then what are your options? What do people do? They mainly go to the doctor, and they get the prescription for the pharmacy.
What do I do?
You grab a monster drink on the way out too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They don't even really pretend like the pharmacy is for your health. It's pretty much You know, think about all the stuff they sell there. Cigarettes
it's
and everything.
It's not the drugstore anymore. It's the pharmacy.
Yeah.
You know, it was better when it was just the drugstore.
And give
I mean,
me
you got, like, actual, you know, cane sugar, sweetened, you know, sodas made there on the spot at the old drugstores. And they probably, I mean, I'd have to assume what they were doing, you know, say, like, in the 50s or something, better than what they're doing now.
Yeah.
But,
you know, they actually had an elderberry Fanta. In Nazi Germany.
Wow.
Elderberry Fanta, that would be delicious.
Yeah.
I'd like to try that.
Sounds like it could be pretty good.
Yeah. So people, don't just accept it as inevitable that you're going to be packing on the pounds these holidays. And then don't just say, oh, I'll just make a New Year's resolution and I'll exercise more. And you'll forget about it in a couple weeks. Just be healthy as you can all the time. Doesn't mean you need to starve yourself during the holidays.
Yeah, but there's no, I mean, why do we gorge on food? Like, why is this a thing that we do at the holidays? I really think about it. Feel good.
Yeah.
You don't look good after. I mean, why just stop? Like, you don't have to eat.
And I know, I know there's the traditional feasting, but they also had a lot of traditional fasting too, which we don't have these days. And the traditional feasting would be, with much, oftentimes, with healthier foods they'd be eating than we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it was a different time and environment where you're really coming together as a clan. And some of this feasting and packing on the pounds was important because you're going through some long winter months where you're going to have to subsist on not so many fresh foods.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, holidays, obviously inherently racist. I wonder if they're going to go over the top. Excuse me, I don't even wonder. I know that they're going to go over the top with Christmas here. A couple of years ago, they were rolling out Black Santa. There was the Christmas penguin who was going to replace the white Santa.
Oh, yeah.
And probably some Black Jesus mangers a lot more this year.
Okay.
I just expect that.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It could be a good thing.
It could be.
Maybe. Secret.
I support Black Jesus. As long as white people aren't identifying with him.
Yeah. It might be one of those things that just kind of furthers
Hebrew Israelites
understanding.
I agree with the Hebrew Israelites. It's not about them, you know, holding us down, making us lick their boots and raping the women and everything. That, obviously, no, that's not going to happen. Hebrew Israelites. But you are the true Jews, the true Israelites of the Bible. Take it.
Yep.
Run with
it. Get rid of it.
Yes. The true Jews. This all just kind of fits within this rapidly changing culture. The culture of America seemed fairly stable while I was growing up. Although there would be different musical styles, technology was changing, the kind of underlying foundations seemed consistent.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
And, of course, we had been undermined a long time ago. The Frankfurt School saw to that. But the change had to be slow. And it reached this point, kind of this edge of the cliff or the hill. You know, we're just slowly going on in our toboggan. Since we're coming towards the winter months, we'll use that metaphor. Slowly going on in our toboggan. Hey, this is a nice little enjoyable ride. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Steep down into the abyss.
I'll tell you when I think that, basically when that switch happened, and I would say you've got Y2K was the first end of the world, right?
Yes.
2000, Y2K, which was such a ridiculous concept, but there
Millennium
was,
bug.
I saw a video explaining Y2K that was made fairly recently, and they actually went into some of the math of how much money it cost in the, like, sale of things related to Y2K, because people were like building bunkers and like buying storable foods.
Or going through all these software programs to change all the years.
To try to change the code. But I think they said it was something like $50 billion.
Wow.
Or maybe it wasn't that much, but even like $1 billion is insane. But that was the first end of the world. And then the second end of the world was 2012.
Yeah.
December 21st, 2012. Right? That was the second end of the world. And I think those two two areas of time, if you really compare them, you see a noticeable shift in the culture, like, after those years.
You had Y2K, President Bush, 9/11,
yeah.
endless Jewish wars.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2012.
We were pretty much done with that.
Yeah, well, then came Sandy Hook, all the fake reality on the TV.
Real shift in that area.
And a huge ramping up of the anti-white agenda, which is why I started paying attention. It was around 2012. I saw, oh my God, I get it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Renegade was, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah, it was 2012. It actually, the first official broadcast on the network was on Thanksgiving 2012.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny to think I've been around since the beginning of Renegade, like before Renegade.
Yeah, before Renegade, yeah.
I was following since then. It's like, wow, has it really been 6 years? Holy crap.
Well, yeah, we were working together while I was at Oracle, and we were trying to expose the people on Oracle.
Yeah.
And people think this is something new where we try to expose controlled opposition. It's
been this way for a while.
Well, back then, the controlled opposition was of a different kind, caliber, too.
Those people are still around, though. Like,
yeah, but are they...
IntelliHub?
Are they... Actually, IntelliHub is fairly influential. I still see Doug Owens' blacklisted news shared all around.
Yes, do see that from time to
Dov
time.
Dov Cohen, as we used to call him. When I was on his network, I had the Chitango account, Dov Cohen, where I had photoshopped in probably, I think, the side box.
I don't know if I knew that was you, but yeah, I do remember the user, Dov Cohen.
Yeah, that was me. I had a Lee Rogers one, too. That was the other owner of Oracle.
Oh, wow.
That's being a little bit of a subversive, but for a good reason.
Yeah.
And then that network fell apart once they fired me.
Yeah.
And Mike Sledge, and was there anybody else that got purged? I don't know.
I think there was somebody purged, like, before all that. Was it Charles, or?
No, I think Charles stayed along till
pretty much the end.
The end, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now he's with us.
I forgot about all that.
And he's seen a lot of that anti-white agenda that at the time he didn't get.
Oh, yeah.
But it just goes to show how much they pushed this down our throats over the past 6+ years. It's always been there. Looking back, once you wake up to it, you can look back and look at the 80s. The evil blonde villain guys. Stupid blonde women.
Every movie.
Yeah, the promotion of Rafe's Mixing going all the way back to probably even before Look Who's Coming to Dinner. Mm-hmm. With Sidney Poitier, very intellectual.
When did that come out? I know that's like cited as kind of the first example of that.
Early 60s?
I'm thinking like 62, maybe.
Ashton Kutcher was in the remake of that.
Really? Oh, yeah. I think
with a black girl, I think?
Yeah, I think I've seen the like cover of that. Oh, wow.
I never watched it. 67.
67.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't care about the Ashton Kutcher one.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show they're just remaking their classic race mixing propaganda.
Oh yeah,
and
they love that.
And before that, before a lot of people became aware of the issue of white genocide, people were starting to wake up in 2012 in a big way to the Jewish problem.
Yeah,
and that was, I'd say, in large part to what people like myself and Charlie and a few others were doing on Oracle Broadcasting. It was really one of the only legitimate alternative broadcasting platforms. It was seen within the truther community as having, you know, some legitimate voices. Oh, yeah. That it wasn't some, you know, completely fringe neo-Nazi type of site.
Oh yeah, like Oracle and Orion were like, at the time, were basically your branch off of Truther, Alex Jones, 9/11, like stuff.
Yeah. And Alex Jones,
they really expanded what kind of areas they were looking into, whether it was spiritual or like some really off the wall stuff. But a lot of it was like just standard politics kind of radio.
Some patriotard type stuff.
Yeah.
Conspiracy radio. It was interesting at the time. I didn't listen to a whole lot of it. But Alex Jones said he wanted to sue some of the guys from Oracle. So, I mean, everybody who was in the conspiracy alternative movement knew about this network. A lot of people now wouldn't. But, and that kind of progression from, oh, look, it's the Jews, and oh, look what the Jews are doing to white people. I mean, it was pretty quick.
Yeah.
It was a quick progression.
And I remember seeing like the white genocide meme and stuff back before, I guess, probably, you know, 7 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a few, I guess, Horse around then, or was it just Bob Whitaker that was doing some of that?
Probably a lot of it was Bob Whitaker initially. I don't know exactly when Horse came about. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 2011 or 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But Whitaker had his mantra since before then.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a while. And there were some people making some videos. Mm-hmm. That's how I came across it, was just some videos.
Yeah. I think Gov Hater.
Probably Gov Hater, white genocide videos.
Wow. Yeah.
So, it's been an interesting ride, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed. I feel like, although I can recognize now that a lot of positive repercussions have come about because of all the work we put in, at the same time, I think looking back, I was a little bit more hopeful that more could have happened sooner, because the evidence was just so incontrovertible, and the arguments were being made time and again. We were putting together all this evidence. It's like case closed. But, and yet, people weren't willing to accept it, couldn't see it, didn't want to do anything about it.
Yeah, like, the perception is the hardest thing to change in people when it comes to that problem. I mean, people are just so brainwashed and conditioned to, like, if you say the word Jew, like, I think this would be a good experiment. Just go into a public place and record you saying, like, another ethnic name, and then say Jew, and record it, and see how many people turn and look.
You could even say something like Packy, which is not considered too PC.
When you say Jew, like, I notice people like, ooh, what? Is somebody
Nazi?
Am I hearing? Yeah, like, they get really weird about it, and it's like, even when Jews say it,
it's a bad word.
They're looking around, like,
how much does that reflect on their own paranoia and neuroses that they've turned it into this bad word?
Yeah,
and also, I mean, what does that say about the Jews themselves when calling you what you are is an ethnic slur?
Derogatory.
Yeah,
like, you've got to be. You can say Jew, but you got to be really careful about
it. You have to say thanks, Jews.
Yeah, you have to pretty much. It has to be like something positive. Anything negative is anti-Semitic.
A light upon the world. So next time you say Jews and people look, just add, and they are a light upon the world.
They're great. They're a bunch of great, great people.
You know, I really do think that sarcasm is a great way to kind of deal with this topic. Mm-hmm. The whole thanks Jews over the top.
It has an
effusive
effect.
Praise.
It has an effect, like sarcasm, it has an effect on people's brains that's different than, they have to sit there and think about it a little bit, I feel like.
Yeah, I've been told not to use sarcasm time and again. I think it might just be the same person, but at least a few people have come to Sinead and I over the years and said, don't be sarcastic. Don't people will get confused. They won't understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think to take away sarcasm from us is to just remove one of our greatest weapons and tools in this fight.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so enjoyable to use as well against them. Mm-hmm. And two, it's so effective at being able to kind of either get under their radar or get under their skin.
Yeah, either it's going to go over their head or they're going to... Yeah, I mean, they have to think of how they're going to respond at that point.
Yeah.
It's like, when they interview like somebody like you, they're like, so, where's the next KKK rally at, right?
Yeah.
And they, like, try all this, like, off-the-wall crap.
Oh, I've got a cross burning in my backyard right
they're
now.
They're expecting you to, like, feed into it. Yeah. And when you don't, you're sarcastic. Or if you, like, play along, like, well, we were thinking about having it at your house this time, honestly, you know. They have to, like, think about, how do I react to this? Like, he's not saying the things I want him to say. Like, do you hate niggers? Like, yes.
When did you start hating niggers?
If you say no, they're like, yes, you do.
No, they could have framed the question like, when did you start hating niggers?
Yeah.
Since when have you been beating your wife?
Yeah.
What caused you to first start doing so?
Yeah. Yeah, please explain.
So, we have the situation where a lot of people do know. There's still a lot out there who don't have a freaking clue.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot do. Yes. A lot more than when we started.
Mm-hmm.
But along with this awakening has come the deluge of spokespeople. You know, and I'm not saying people should just trust us or trust me or trust Renegade simply because we've been around talking about these same issues for over 6 years now. But when you see some of these new guys come along and they, you know, sometimes they talk a good game. And oftentimes they change their mind quite a bit, or they push somebody like Trump. You know, you've got to have your defenses up, be on guard. There are lots of people out there who pretend like controlled opposition doesn't exist. Like our enemy never thought about it. Never would spend a dime. With all the money they're spending, they would never spend a dime.
Or setting up. People are the belief that people are too incompetent to commit conspiracies. Like, the 9/11 conspiracy or like something that's kind of big. They can't fathom that there are literally people that are willing to keep that a secret. Or,
no, they always say somebody would have leaked it.
Are you serious?
Somebody would have leaked it at one of these hoax shootings.
What about like the Catholic school or whatever where they dug up all the bodies like recently, and it's from like almost 100 years ago. When they were these bodies were not fresh. It's like they obviously kept that a secret. Like
that's nobody can keep secrets in this
nobody
world.
Can keep secrets. It's like somebody would leak it. And it's like, we do have leakers sometimes, and they're just, oh no, they're not legitimate. Or
and they might find end up dead.
Sometimes they are just, I think, actors to muddy the waters.
Oh yeah, limited hangouts too. They might put out some legitimate information and then blame it on Nazis. Kathy O'Brien, a good example. There are plenty of other kinds of Kathy O'Briens who will say some things that likely could be true and name some names. And then, these paperclip Nazis. It's like Mengele all over again.
There was something I remember about her that it had to do with her therapist and, like, being her actual handler, I believe.
And then she went back to him or something.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff going on with that. It's been a while since I've looked into that. But I don't know how we got on to Kathy O'Brien.
Well, controlled opposition.
Controlled opposition.
And you've got them just all over YouTube now. Really, anybody who's on YouTube doing live streams at this point, is they're there because YouTube allows them to be there. So if they allow them to be there, it means that they're not being actual voices for our cause, or that they're just fulfilling the enemy's agenda outright. That this is part of their objective. Either make us look bad, to misinform our people, whatever the case may be.
Alright,
let's take this break here.
The elite?
Wrong.
Is it the military-industrial complex?
Wrong.
Is it the Illuminati?
Wrong.
Is it the Freemasons?
Wrong.
Jesuits, Vatican, Satanists?
Wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
I don't know then. I mentioned all of them whom they talk in the media about.
Do you want to know who is it?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Then listen to the most honest...
Stop. I want to know now.
It's... the Jews. It's always been the Jews. Learn more at the hard-hitting talk radio Renegade Broadcasting.
right, welcome back. I'm here with Drew. Before the break, we were talking about controlled opposition, the evolving truth, white genocide, whatever movement, and just the amount of controlled opposition there. Anything you wanted to bring up regarding some people you've seen crop up on YouTube or other places and just where things have been heading in that regard?
I haven't been paying too close attention to some of these, like, controlled opposition figures, or I guess your more mainstream alternative kind of people. But, I mean, I see some of your Laura Loomer, you know, your right-wing stuff, some of the activism, Identity Europa, and some of these other groups are doing. And
Evropa.
I'm not really... I will be honest, like, I didn't like Identity Europa or Evropa from the beginning, and, like, I took a step back. I didn't watch, like, anything they did for almost a year, and then kind of looked into them again a little bit. And under, what's his name, Patrick...
Casey.
I feel like the group is lower than they've ever been in terms of just their image. They come off really poorly. Like, I'm... sorry, even, like... maybe I'm biased because I'm a Renegade host or whatever, but I would say, like, honestly, I really just don't like their message and overall presentation.
I, at the time, liked the National Youth Front when it was formed by, well, first it was Caleb Schumacher, but then Angelo Gage took it over.
Took it over.
And?
Which he was, Schumacher was a Jew.
Yeah.
So
I wonder why he came from AFP.
So really think about it, though. Like, I mean, there's probably a lot of people that don't know that that's where Identity Evropa came from.
Yeah. A race-mixing Jew, too. He had a, what, mestizo?
Yeah, he had some type of mestizo girlfriend or what? Yeah, I believe he had a child with her.
He liked a bunch of rap and stuff on his Facebook page.
Yeah, he was like a fan of Eminem on Facebook.
Yeah, and also he was putting out... Charlie Hebdo type propaganda.
Yeah.
Stuff about Charlie Hebdo was very relevant, like, in Europe at the time.
Anti-Islam.
Yeah, anti-Islam, like, crusade in America and American campuses, where it wasn't really that relevant.
It's not that much of a problem on our campuses. It's more so now. Maybe it's a little bit more relevant now.
But, yeah.
Or Canada, even. I'm sure that would maybe be a little bit more...
Unfortunately, those are some
targeted.
Those are some of the only people who actually speak out against Jews, though, because they're involved in the BDS movement.
Yeah.
So those Muslims that you're protesting against, Caleb, they're the only ones really calling out Jews. But you're cool with that because, well, you're a Jew. Yeah. Then it was Angelo Gage. I thought Angelo was legitimate. I had met him on that same road show where I had interviewed you.
Yeah.
And I thought he was legitimate, thought he was trying to do some good things. I think that some of the people originally involved with the NYF, the National Youth Front, were genuine. Yeah. They were staging some protests, like at, what is it, University of Arizona, with that guy who was teaching the problem of whiteness class. Caused a stink, made that controversy well known. And I had some hopes for the group. Yeah, now looking back, I think Angelo was always a fraud.
Yeah, I don't trust them at all. I mean, he's so flip-flopped, and I think it was just a matter of, like, all right, time to turn the tables. Like, this is, my contract is up. Like, this is what I was supposed to do.
Time to put on the MAGA hat.
Yeah.
It was just so funny seeing him explode within the mainstream press, where they didn't say anything about his background. That this guy was once an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist talking about white genocide and the rest. It's a former Marine. Marine speaks out about all the attacks on Trump. It was probably Breitbart probably mentioned him, I think. It was Daily Beast. I don't know. Yeah. There were a bunch of people, a bunch of media outlets that covered
it up.
His viral video.
I have seen him recently. Like, he's real soft on the way that he presents his criticism of Jews, but on Twitter, he definitely doesn't avoid the question.
You can't if you want to be...
But it's really like...
Yeah.
You know, he's not saying, like, these people, Jews, are a problem.
Yeah, I think they all need to dog whistle now for the general truth seekers out there to consider them close to legitimate. They've got to at least address it somehow, or else people will just continue hounding them, which I think is good.
Yeah.
So what about the Jews? Hey. Yeah, but what about the Jews? You're talking about Muslims invading Europe. Yeah, okay, cool. But what about the Jews? Yeah, what about the Jews behind it?
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of tiptoe around the issue.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what about the so-called normies out there, the mm-hmm. regular people who aren't involved in this? Have you seen any signs of hope within them? You deal with, I guess I deal with some of them nowadays, but you probably deal with more than myself.
Yeah, kind of interesting before I forget. I was actually driving behind a car the other day that had a Thor's hammer sticker.
I see a lot more.
That's like the first I've ever seen really around here. I might have seen one or two more, but nothing like along those lines really at all.
Yeah, I see a lot of Jesus Saves type billboards around mm-hmm. here.
Oh, yeah. yep. There's a lot of stuff like that around here. But as far as like normies or normal people just running into everyday people, I do see a little bit more hope, I guess, than I have at other times. But not a whole lot of great reactions from people. It seems like people are waking up to the more mundane or kind of your health, like your standard stuff, and they're kind of getting it. They're kind of falling for some of the shills.
They know that something is wrong, and they're trying to find a solution. They're just getting caught in the traps.
Yeah, they're early stages, you know, finding that there is a problem.
That they're being lied. It's great that they're being lied to about something that opens up so many doors. Hey, you're being lied to about what's good for you, what's healthy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So if they'd lie to me about that, what else might they lie to me about?
Yeah.
It really does start somebody on a good journey.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they continue on it.
Yeah, it's definitely better than nothing. It's a start.
Yeah, it's great for people to accept that there are conspiracies, like with mm-hmm. pharmaceutical companies, that they're not there to actually get you well, that they're there to make a huge profit for their shareholders.
Yeah. But on top of that, like, it seems like for every person I find like that, there's some person that's, like, just so far degenerated, it's, like, jaw-droppingly unbelievable that...
I feel like there's a split.
So terrible.
And it probably did happen sometime around 2012, and it wasn't a complete split right then. There's still people who have... It seems like some people who were on an awakening journey who just then went completely down the degeneracy dump.
Yeah.
But there have, and vice versa, people who have woken up since then who are mm-hmm. now on an upward path. But it seems like humanity is splitting.
Yeah.
We're at a time when there are some people who have incredible health. They've got incredible awareness. They're able to see so much. And then there are people using the same tools, like the internet, who are going in the opposite direction. All they're seeing is degenerate pornography.
Oh, yeah.
Or ultra violence mm-hmm. on the screens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's video games or their TV and movies.
Yeah.
It's like there is a legitimate split within humanity. I'm not saying that those people don't have souls, they don't have a potential for that, but it's just that they are... It's not that they can't come back, but unless something is done to really shock them out, to break them out of that, they're not going to do it on their own, it doesn't seem.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a problem. Like, there's some people that I run into and meet and talk to or hear stories from other people about relatives, family members, friends, and some of the stuff I hear is just, like, hard to believe how bad of situations that people have gotten themselves into, like, relationship problems, children, and just, like...
Finances.
Yeah, finances, debt.
Drugs.
Drugs is a huge one.
Has that been getting worse from your own network that you can tell? Because I've heard so many bad stories.
Yeah, it seems like I am hearing about more and seeing more people that are on drugs. I'd say the pharmaceutical drugs are definitely at, like, a peak of some point. It seems like a lot of people I run into just seem like they're on...
They're on cloud nine, seventh heaven up there.
Yeah, they're on some kind of antidepressant or antipsychotic or like something along those lines.
Hey, at least they're smiling. It's like that old Christian smile.
Yeah.
Completely fake, and there's the pain and sadness behind it.
Yep. It's kind of creepy.
Or just the emptiness. Mm-hmm. That's the worst part where you're like, it's like there's nothing there behind that. Where are you?
Yeah, sometimes I ask the question, I'm like, are these people even real? Like, There's just people on this earth that aren't actually real. Like they're some kind of automaton.
Well, that's where the whole soulless idea comes from. And I don't think it is necessarily the case. Like they're destined to be subhumans. They weren't even born with a soul. I think it's that they've just become so dense. They have no lightness within them. It's like they're kind of burnt out, and they're just a shell at this point. And I don't give up hope entirely for these people. No matter how far people have gone, I feel like with the right kind of motivation, with the right kind of leadership, they can at least be turned around and get to a healthier state. They're never going to reach their potential. I'm never going to reach the potential that I could have had because of all the vaccine damage, because of all the poor choices I made in my earlier years, all the self-inflicted brain damage through guzzling all sorts of bad liquor and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't mean you shouldn't try to be as best as you can be now.
Yeah.
And you can reverse a lot of it.
There's almost zero, push. Like, look at the media, commercials, anything. There's, no push for actually being healthy and in shape. Like, you get these stupid PSAs that just make people laugh and ignore it. It means nothing. Like, there's no, you look at schools, how they operate, there's no real motivation to be fit and healthy.
The opposite is true.
An option, but it's not really an option.
I think honestly, just somebody being fit now is inherently fat shaming according to this culture. I told you earlier today about Sarah Michelle Gellar on Thanksgiving or the day before had tweeted out something about she was putting up pictures of her old young days where she was modeling and very fit, just a reminder not to overeat on Thanksgiving and the holidays. And there was this huge backlash against her for fat shaming, and so she had to come out and apologize and say, I wasn't trying to fat shame anybody, but just remind myself that it's not good to whatever. Yeah. The point is that you can't even try to motivate people to be healthier now.
Yeah.
Because your idea of healthy is just completely subjective. There's no objective healthy. Look at these Dove models. Big is beautiful. Uh-huh. The whole plus size model campaign.
That stuff is disgusting. I'm sorry, that's not beautiful.
It's a complete swing from the other ideal they were holding up, which was also unhealthy, with the anorexic, bulimic model.
Yeah, it's just as bad. Like, health, I mean, I think attractiveness in that sense, like, we're talking like somebody that's a model, should be, your fitness should be a major part of that.
Yes.
Like, just because you're skinny, it shouldn't mean anything if you look like you're gonna
fall over with a little gust of wind.
Yeah, there's a point where it's too skinny, too fat.
Healthy.
You know.
Why don't we have healthy be the ideal?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
And this is the thing that always gets me, is they're like, all this stuff creates, what do they say? I mean, all the push for women to look this way, it makes, women feel self-conscious about their own image, and it's like, isn't there a way that you can still say this is what we consider to be beautiful?
Yeah.
And make people not feel bad because they don't look like
that?
Yes,
there's definitely a way to do that.
Why people feel bad because they don't look like a model? Like, I don't feel bad about that. I try to look as decent as I can for what I've got, but you don't have so much control over it. Like, people shouldn't feel bad about that, but that's not to say that we should put some fat blob, ugly thing on a statue and say, this is what beauty is.
Ooh, I should get fatter this holiday season.
Because anybody can conform to that standard. I mean,
it's not hard to be fat. I mean, for a few people, it is.
Yeah.
But all you gotta do is just let yourself go completely.
It's hard for me to be fat. I've tried. It doesn't.
You want to be beautiful, according to society standards today, you need big man boobs.
Oh, yeah.
That's beautiful. Big is beautiful.
Big and beautiful.
Big, sweaty man boobs.
Oh, I saw some kind of article about, what was it? Something to the effect of, you need to accept my man boobs or something like that.
Oh, wow. Man, I'm seeing so many of them now. Mm. When I'm out in public, I see just so many soft people.
Oh, yeah.
Physically, mentally, spiritually, just soft. And that's why they're giving no real resistance to any of this.
It kind of makes you wonder if there's, really is some aliens out there, and they've been, Yeah, we're gonna get these people nice and fat before fattened we come up. In and eat them up.
Yep. It's just like the Tyson chickens. You can't walk around.
Their time.
Yeah. Think about the Tyson chickens. They they get so fat at such an early age because they're gonna get slaughtered very quickly in their life. You have big turnover.
Numbers.
Yeah. So it's just like the people now these days. I see some children out there.
Yeah.
I mean, they can barely talk. They're legitimately obese.
Yeah,
I've I've seen some of the Mexican or whoever from south the border children, who I mean they're feeding them Cheetos and Pepsis and things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and really these unhealthy. Children, huge rolls.
Yeah,
cellulite.
That's like child abuse.
It should be.
Yeah, I mean some people argue it's not, but I would argue that is child abuse. Like, just like. Anything else that would be a danger to your child's health that you as a parent allow, like if you're giving them all that food, you're obviously allowing it.
Well, they'll argue it's genetics. Look at me, I'm fat, so my child's going to be fat.
Yeah.
No, are you eating the same
food?
Some
of that may be true. Like, I guess there's
a little aspect of it, but it's because they're eating the same food, because they have the same values.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's a big part of it. They're eating the same food.
Yeah. I wonder why. Although I do see some young children who still have a decent metabolism who have huge obese parents, but they themselves seem to be pretty fit.
Yeah.
I hope they stay that way, that eventually doesn't catch up to them.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I've noticed with a lot of like big families, like heavy obese like families, like sometimes you have one or two kids out of that four or whatever that eats just as much as the family, eats the same things, and does obviously metabolize better than...
You know, probably more active doing sports and things.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I think that's one of the things that really sucks about the way that we view getting older, and, you know, leaving school and everything. I should have no more athleticism. That's all in the past.
Yep, we just go and paint our faces up and go to the game.
Yeah, go to the game, put a Swiss cheese block thing on your head, and go root for the Packers. So... but they're also the same thing as people don't want to learn anymore. I'm done with all that learning.
Yeah, thank God. No more learning. That'd be bad.
So their physicality and their mentality just go right down the tubes. They let themselves go entirely. Yeah. And it gets harder as you get older because you don't have the same kind of metabolism as you did when you were a teenager full of all sorts of hormones and very active. So that just means that you need to work a little bit harder, to eat a little bit smarter.
Yeah.
And you've got the wisdom, the years, the experience that you should be able to do that. Yeah. I hate the idea that as we get older, we need to inherently just basically get worse.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got a wife
now.
You're
all downhill from it.
You've got a wife now. What do you need to look good for?
Yeah.
Not trying to attract anybody.
That's a good one.
Care about. So that's often what happens. People get married, they let themselves go. They don't need to attract a partner. I found might as well. I'll become my true self, my
planted.
True bulbous self.
Yep. Planting right here. It's the hill I'm on down. Just get on fat.
You know, another thing that people just accept as in an inevitability about getting older is that they'll get on more and more medications that they'll take more of until they die.
Yeah.
Especially our parents' generation, the boomers, right? Yeah. They have it in their minds that it's completely healthy, natural, the right thing to do to just get on a bunch of medications and not even try to get off them. Yeah. This is just a temporary solution, you should never go to medication for this kind of temporary solution, but they're not even thinking, once I get things straightened out, I'll get off all these drugs and I'll be back to just living a healthy life. No, it's just
give me some pills. Like,
they got these,
come on, doctor.
These
give me
you
some
know
pills.
7 days a week filled with pill after pill after pill, and it makes the juice so much money.
The weird thing too is like I've heard people that have like had like accidents, they've gotten hurt where they took some kind of medications. And like I've heard this multiple different occasions where they'll be talking to somebody else like, oh yeah, man, I broke my whatever and they gave me a bunch of this. Like, dude, if you ever go in, you ask for that. It's like good stuff. They'll put you on it for like a month after that. It's like, I saved up like half of mine. It was really good. You know, I just like popped three or four of them or whatever. It's like, whoa, okay. Like, that's a little crazy. Like, obviously that's not a proper way to use your medication.
Yeah. Even when I was... when I was young, I had my wisdom teeth pulled out. I didn't need to take nearly as many of the pain pills that they gave me.
Yeah.
I forget what kind they were, but I'm sure it was an opioid of some sort. That's the only thing that they give
usually
out.
Usually some, like, I guess codeine or...
I definitely have had codeine, but I don't know if that's what I got. Yeah. That. It might have been hydrocodone.
Yeah.
But
hydrocodone, yeah, I think, is the one that they use for...
Even back then, when I was irresponsible, drinking a lot, I knew, hey, it's probably not a good idea for me to finish this bottle.
Yeah.
I don't want to get addicted. Because already, yeah, I'd heard about Limbaugh. I think Favre might have been around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all these people just get taken down the road of pain pills.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they're still handing out, like, candy to young children.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dude, right. I mean, it's just crazy.
They're giving amphetamines to our kids, man. Like, that's a big thing. It's like,
psychotropics,
ADD,
too.
ADD, give you some amphetamines. Yeah. I know multiple people that have been or are prescribed amphetamines.
Let's put some young
or
developing...
ADD. It's like, you're in your 20s, dude. Like, why are you taking that? It's meth, like, basically.
Let's give young developing minds speed. Let's see how that works out for our society.
Yeah. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, that's going to lead to a good future where we get a whole generation of children hooked on speed.
Yeah.
Amphetamines. It's just crazy.
It's scary.
And even... things weren't as bad when I was growing up. They were headed in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But even in middle school, I remember kids selling each other. At that time, it would be Ritalin,
Ritalin,
I think.
Yeah.
They'd Ritalin sell each other Ritalin and snort Ritalin in the bathrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I've heard similar stories.
And I went to a good school, supposedly.
The private schools I
heard. No, it wasn't private. It was public, but it was in an area of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Almost entirely white.
Yeah.
And what's wealthy?
The stories I find interesting are a lot of kids that went to, like, Christian schools, like private Christian schools. Like, I hear a lot of stories about, you know, drug use, pot, smoking, like sex, and it seemed like something about that just caused, and pedophilia too.
Yeah,
it seems to be a big thing you find in some of these private schools. I mean, I'm not going to go to as far as to say every school,
I noticed the prep,
private periods like that or something.
The rich prep school guys that went to college with were more effeminate, more into drug use in general than their public school counterparts. Yeah, it was these rich pampered boys just kind of being locked up together.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what goes on, but it seems to have some kind of relation to the old boys schools in Britain.
Yeah.
And the buggery, the child rape that would go on over there. That's the elite thing to do. Isn't that what Aleister Crowley said? Was if you want your children to be elite, you just got to have them sodomized, you know?
Yeah, wasn't the Edred Thorson thing, one of you guys read, like, talking about he was buggering the younger Temple of Set?
Yeah, so what Thorson, Stephen Flowers... had done was, I guess he sided with somebody or was backing up somebody who was making those accusations.
Okay.
Now, I don't trust... That would seem to be an honorable thing to do, but he was still in the Temple of Set,
still
being run by Aquino.
Yeah.
And it just seems completely...
how could you trust that guy? Like,
and he stayed a part of it even when those accusations were made public.
Yeah, it's...
You know, that they're...
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, the people that interviewed him... one of the only people that's interviewed Edred Thorson in history.
Was Henry?
Just happens to seem... seems to have some kind of weird military connection to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Which I'm pretty sure Edred does... Didn't he have military experience of some kind?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think I think McNallan might have.
I can't remember if McNallan did or not. Yeah, there's... not to say everybody that's been in the military is somehow, like, an agent or something, but...
No, but it does raise some questions.
Yeah, there's been a lot of them that I think have been proven to be running some type of operation.
Yeah.
Or I think there's been enough that were proven, you know, shields, you know, government-style shields to be a little bit suspect of some of them.
Except Pat Little. Do not be suspect of
Pat Little.
Is jaywalking.
Yeah.
There are quite a few characters that have come out of the military. Angela being another one, of course, we mentioned.
That's another one.
So, pharmaceuticals, as we mentioned before, taking out a lot of people. There are a lot of people, on the other hand, who are looking more towards the natural cures now.
Yeah.
You're not even supposed to call them that. Isn't it just so insane that you could have products. They're derived from natural ingredients mm-hmm. that will cure different things. And if you, but if you say that they do, mm-hmm. even if you say that orange juice will cure scurvy, which it does because of the vitamin C in it, you can be prosecuted by the FDA or the DEA or whoever come clamp down on you. And it's because they need the monopoly in the pharmaceuticals. If people found out the real ways to deal with a lot of these problems, they're so cheap.
Yeah.
Compared to...
Basically make it to where anything natural can't cure, treat, or prevent anything.
Yeah.
That's what, I mean...
That's what
cure, it comes treat, down prevent to. Is yep. there, like their stipulation. It has to have FDA approval. And, I mean, that's a very controlled process. And there's a lot of drugs that go through that approval process with the FDA that don't make it. And it costs a lot of money to go through that FDA approval process. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty dodgy. But it's not to be trusted. It's so controlled. What they, allow as far as these different drugs and... When it's not for our best interest.
When they do their own safety testing, too?
Yeah, it's
we'll take care of that safety testing for you. We'll do the research. Don't you worry. Yeah. Oh, wait, look, it turned out completely safe for human consumption.
But there's been tons of whistleblowers that have proven, numerous drugs that they knew they weren't safe. They knew the side effects, and they hid it.
It's got to be, I think it's honestly got to be an extension of MKUltra, the pharmaceutical industry, and their cooperation with the government. It is for mass mind control.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the results of it, it works.
Seems like it's working pretty well.
When you combine the hypnotism of the TV, mind controlled, goy slave, zombies.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty insane.
It's down to a science.
I'm just amazed at the people that seem to be fully buying it. It's like, how do you buy into this? Like, how do you... I just don't understand how anybody could look at this with an open mind at all.
Yeah.
Like, any of the material we talk about, information, or just look around. Like, does this look like a healthy world?
Does it look like maybe there's a nefarious criminal conspiracy of some sort
going
on?
Are you really happy? Like... I mean, some of these people, I think, ignorance is bliss is really true to them.
Yeah.
They'd rather... I've experienced people that basically say, like, don't say anymore. I don't want to know. I don't want you to ruin it for me. I want to just believe this lie. Like, let me believe this lie. Please leave me.
Down it, Drew. Mr. Buzzkill.
All right, we'll be back in a second. All right, Mr. Buzzkill.
Hosts here at Renegade Broadcasting do a great job presenting to you cutting-edge and hard-hitting content every day of the week. They do this all for free, because they care about getting the truth out there and ensuring that we, and future generations, have a future worth living for. Our enemies have an endless supply of money to finance their operations, but we're able to work wonders working on a shoestring budget. If you appreciate a host's content, visit their archive page and find out how to support them, or even send a nice thank you note. We all appreciate it. Thank you for your consideration. Now back to the show.
So be out for a few shekels, then divided up my robes.
Then sold me out.
It's the oldest story that you've ever been told.
They sold me out.
Didn't even give a no shred about no.
They sold me out.
Didn't even sit down and try to figure it out.
They just sold me out.
for a few shekels more. Didn't even think twice for a few shekels more. Another million in the spotlight.
Renegade Broadcasting, hard-hitting talk radio.
Something bright like a diamond shone. Mist and magic filled the air. From wedding feast to devil's lair. Suddenly the walls ran red. Kith and kin all lying dead. None to follow, none to chase. Fear and pain on the young bride.
Welcome back. It is the second hour. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, and I am here with Drew. Good little message here in the chat from Level 6 Toaster. Rule number 16, the more wisdom you attain and the more conscious you become, the crazier you will appear to others.
Yeah.
And it certainly is the case.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, you know, a lot of times I feel like I'm not normal.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not like other people. And then I realize, like, oh, it's just other people are really weird.
Yeah.
They're into a lot of really weird stuff.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, like, I mean, what makes something weird or not normal? I mean, I guess normal, I don't know the true definition of it, like, you know, off the top of my head, but usually I think of that as, like, what's the norm?
Yeah.
What's average? What's the standard or general?
You wouldn't want to be average.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to be so-called normal in today's society.
Yeah.
That'd make you an idiotic degenerate. Pretty much a materialistic asshole who has to screw people over in order to feel good about themselves and succeed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to talk about the surveillance state for a little bit. This is something that mm-hmm. people think you're a paranoid conspiracy theorist if you're talking just about how much we're surveilled on a daily basis. But there is a legitimate surveillance state where you go out in public,
mm-hmm.
you are on so many different cameras. During the day, even in rural areas, you'll be seen on many cameras. Yeah. Just going about your daily...
Pretty much every business you go into, yeah. you're going to be on at least one camera.
And they have biometrics. They have artificial intelligence now where if they want to, they'll be able to tell exactly who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And the government is just one aspect of it. The private businesses are employing different kinds of surveillance and different kinds of AI, facial recognition and whatnot. And it's really a kind of brave new world we're seeing here. And the technology is pretty incredible now. Even what's available to the private sector, just to people who are willing to purchase this stuff for their mm-hmm. own use or their own business. I mean, it's pretty wild. So then you think, well, what could they employ, you know, with lots of money and government force?
Yeah, I mean, I was telling Kyle, I think earlier today, that I've had the opportunity to play around with some of these Nest cameras, like the Nest doorbell. It's pretty wild what you can do with the cameras. I mean, you can set it to where it alerts you when someone walks past or it sees somebody on camera, it'll take snapshots. You can kind of set your area. So if you were on a street and you didn't want the camera to like send you a notification when a car drives by, but you want to set it to where it'll send you a notification if somebody walks up your driveway or crosses that property line. You can actually, you know, draw the zone on there onto, like, the image of where you want it to actually be looking at. Mm-hmm. You can program it. Somehow you can program these Nest cameras detect faces. So if you had a friend, I'm not sure exactly how that process works. Yeah. If you need like multiple pictures of them, or if you need some kind of special picture,
a scan of some
like
sort,
maybe almost like a scan with an app or something. But you can program them to detect like who people are. So like if your friend was coming up and it caught them, they would be okay to enter.
No, I don't think this technology is inherently evil. I see that there is a purpose for it.
It's not inherently bad. No, I would agree with you there. It just depends on who's using it and what they're using it for.
Exactly.
And we've obviously seen through, if you've watched any movies in the past 20 years, it's obviously been a theme that's recurred over and over again about the surveillance state and what role it plays.
The Net with Sandra Bullock, or Enemy of the State with Will Smith. Mm-hmm. Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, was it 1984? Yeah. That was surveillance.
Oh, yeah.
It was really.
They had the telescreens. And then they also, that would also be able to see the people.
Yeah.
That in the room. You didn't know if they were watching or not. Now we have televisions that have cameras installed in them.
Mm-hmm.
Where they can just legitimately listen to you and watch you.
We have appliances with cameras.
Yes. Well, just laptops,
it's like
in general.
Crazy.
I've got tape over this one.
It's like, yo, I'm tweeting from my fridge. Oh my gosh, man! What? Why do we need all this? It's so unnecessary.
Well, gosh. We don't need it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you think that they would try to charge extra for it? Hey, a new feature. We'll throw a camera in there for your own convenience and safety, or whatever. No. That's just, it comes standard. Don't worry about it. You don't have to pay extra for that camera, that microphone.
That's all
your
we're
fridge.
Making now. Yeah. That's all we're working now. We're making now. Yeah.
Headed to the future, the brave new world.
Yeah.
And so it seems like we'll see a lot of new technology that comes out in these regards for private use. Of course, the public use here in America will probably be more and more like China, and also like in Britain. Just ever more pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, then will come the techniques to either scramble the signal somehow to get around the different facial recognition systems. They might very well ban masks here in the country, especially with Antifa. That's one of the justifications. And the right wing is all about, oh yeah, ban the masks.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be very well to make sure that people can't get around. All these cameras,
And think if you is a threat.
If you wanted to do some guerrilla activism, even just post flyers with a so-called anti-Semitic message,
you have to worry about them like finding surveillance. I want to say I saw a news report where they used security footage to like, you know, do a "Have you seen this guy?" The police would like to talk to him.
He drew a swastika in the snow. He's a hate criminal.
Oh my god.
Did you see that story? Swastika in the snow, and the police and FBI will investigate immediately.
It's like good use of resources.
Yeah.
Because there's so many Nazis just running around like causing so much trouble in this country right now.
It's crazy to think how much money and resources, energy, raw energy is going into archiving all of this video footage from so many different cameras. Now, of course, not every single camera out there is going to have an indefinite archive of it, but just think about how much storage space that takes.
Well, then you get to like peak. The problem that I guess the elites or the
globalists,
powers, the globalists,
the New World Order,
the problem the globalists have,
the Germanic death cult, perhaps,
is. They've been really good at collecting the data, but where they struggle is how do you process it? Because you really don't want people processing too much of that.
No, not physical people.
Like,
yeah,
they're going to blow the whistle. So
that's why you have AI.
That's why you have the AI aspect coming in, because they're not going to like, you know, disagree with an order to like send me every sound, like every cell phone. Like, say you had a wiretap of every cell phone.
Yeah.
How do you break down that data?
Even if
people, like, do anything with it? Well, so much.
People are much more willing to go along with an AI reading their emails than a person.
Yeah.
Think of Google, where they'll read the emails and then offer advertisements based on what's being said in the email. This is openly done.
Oh, yeah.
And also try to finish your sentences, because obviously... Mm-hmm. They're reading everything you write, like, as you write it.
The reply function that Gmail has, it's where even, it's like a whole sentence. It's like, wait. And a lot of times they're not even close, but it's...
Maybe you haven't seen this, but they'll actually finish your sentences for you while you write.
Oh,
let
wow.
Let me show you this.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that.
Hey, did you know that... Oh.
Maybe it's not working.
Google is finishing... my sentences. Maybe it's not going to do it with this one, but it will actually start offering in a light gray text. Yeah,
is it like stuff you've typed before? Or?
Sometimes, perhaps it's learning from when I type, but it's often very accurate.
Oh wow!
It actually does. It does accurately complete my sentences or questions, whatever, for me.
Yeah,
crazy. So it is definitely opening up a whole can of worms here that I think most people aren't ready to face the implications of.
Yeah.
They'd rather bury their head in the sand and think that this is just the old days.
Trust that they're fine. Like, everything's fine. Just trust them with my passwords and, trust they're not going to do anything bad, right? I mean, it's the government.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to do anything bad with that. Like, I'm fine.
And they're conditioning people
on Facebook, and
they're conditioning people to be willing to hand over their passwords to government authorities as well.
Yep.
New bill in New York that people need to hand over their passwords so that their
past
3 years of social media history can be accessed for any kind of hatred, bigotry, anti-Semitism, whatever you will, and white nationalism. And then, and only then, once they're cleared, after they hand over their passwords and their social media is just fine, they've only been posting photos of their terrible food and and cats. No offense to Toaster. Then they can get a gun. But it's also, I think, something that they tried to implement so that if you were going to leave the country or come back in, you've got to give over your social media accounts.
Oh, yeah.
So they can be checked to make sure that you're not... one of those terrorists, extremists, a radical.
Because the government really cares about our well-being, right?
Yeah, and they're really effective at stopping terror attacks.
Yeah, they don't like terrorism.
Just think about that. How many terror attacks and school shootings and all the rest have occurred, especially in the last 6 years, but how nobody, and then going back to 9/11, how nobody has ever been fired, reprimanded for the absolute failure of their security systems that they charged the taxpayer billions and trillions of dollars for.
Yep.
Hey, you guys are failing. Yeah, it's always we the people who are punished for their their failures, which are obviously psyops that they create.
It's
pretty obvious when you really start looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to kind of shift gears just a little bit and talk about some things that you and I have an interest in that aren't necessarily conspiracy related.
Mm.
And one of the things that I like, you like, but we also see maybe some drawbacks in, is the do-it-yourself culture that is arising. And it has been enabled by things like YouTube. Back in the day, if you wanted to learn how to, let's say, lay a foundation and build some structural walls, you could go to the library, maybe scan some pages, check out the book, whatever the case may be. But now, you've got so many different options of YouTube videos. You can watch somebody do it and pick it up, usually pretty quickly yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's to the point where, I mean, if you want to watch that 5-minute video on this is how this is done, or watch the guy that does it real time in like some kind of 3-hour stream,
mm-hmm.
you've got that too, because, I mean, we have the ability to process that data now. Whereas 10 years ago, trying to watch a 3-hour video is like impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be just such a big file, such a long video to host. But, like Kyle was saying, the drawbacks that we've kind of seen in the do-it-yourself kind of movement is, in a lot of cases, if you really considered how much you make hourly, say if you have a job, or just generally how much you make an hour when you are working, and compare it to when you're doing that DIY thing that you have to learn and then sometimes buy tools or equipment to do, and then actually buy whatever it is that you know, you're replacing or fixing material for it, it hits that point where if you're really paying yourself properly,
yeah,
you would have been better off to pay somebody right. to do it.
You say, but you save money on material costs. You're not spending as much money.
That money right. If you don't have that money to begin with,
you'd rather spend the hours.
Yeah, you can make that time. So in a way, it's like kind of a funny math of or funny economics of how that works. But you know, kind of what we were discussing is how it would be so much better to be able to afford to pay that specialist to do what he knows to do and what he's good at.
He could do it in 20 minutes instead of you having to go out to the store, having to watch the videos, and it takes, you know, 7 hours or something by the time you're done.
But it's like people like us, we don't have, you know, we're not making $100,000 a year for our families to where we can afford to pay somebody to fix, you know, something on our house or maybe something on a car or, you know, mow our lawn or, you know, anything like that. It's like, yeah, we just have to take that time to do it because we physically don't make enough money to even think about paying somebody to do those things. So that's where I see the drawbacks to it, as far as actually doing things for yourself. It's not as efficient as...
Yeah.
You know, really paying somebody to do it, but the money's not there. You've got to figure something out. And I think me and Kyle have both had our moments of like extreme resourcefulness when it comes to fixing things and like finding a way to like, I'm going to make this work.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's kind of ghetto rigged.
Doesn't look the best. Yeah. Might not be the safest with my own work in particular, but it will get the job done for now. It'll save me some money.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody in the chat, Petro Bill, is bringing up the term opportunity cost. And in microeconomic theory, the opportunity cost refers to the next cost, best alternative use of resources, also known as alternative cost. It's not a hollow cost. it is the best value, not a benefit, of the choice in terms of the best alternative while making a decision. And anyway, I've determined oftentimes that the best thing for me to do is honestly just to do it myself. I've got the time, but I don't have a whole lot of money to throw at the problem.
Yeah.
Just do it yourself. And it's become easier. However, there still are drawbacks, especially with the technology that's coming out today. And huge hurdles, because we don't have, at least I don't have for a lot of problems, you have some of this, but you don't have the diagnostic equipment to deal with certain kinds of cars and electronics and even washing machines or dryers.
Appliances.
All the refrigerators that come out now too. All these computerized things. We can't really get in there and even find out what the problem is properly. Yeah. We can't even troubleshoot, let alone fix it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be really good with some of these smart appliances. They have their, like LG has their own diagnostic tool, right? And Samsung will have their own diagnostic tool. And there may be multiple diagnostic tools that they carry for different year models, but these machines are definitely not made to be serviced by us.
Yeah.
You can attempt, and you maybe get lucky and find a mechanical problem that you can physically see and find a part online and replace it. But a lot of the electrical issues, you're certainly not going to be able to peg down. Whereas they may be able to hook up and it tell them what kind of fault code, you know, it's throwing, and it's definitely going to narrow it down. Still not a guarantee of what they need to do in all cases, but it's more of a science than, you know, we can do sometimes without those tools.
I like specialists. I like specialists getting paid for their work, but I don't like when a serviceman is essentially required for any problem that is inevitably going to arise.
When you don't need them. And the problem that I have and run into a lot is, in some cases, it would be probably smarter and not that much more expensive to pay somebody to do something for me.
Yeah.
But depending on what it is and what my knowledge of it, of the repair is or what they need to do, I don't really trust them to do that properly.
Right.
Because so many people are just, they don't care. There's no, like, you compare a lot of, like, these European, like, craftsmen and people that build things and work on things, like, they have this, like, care about the way that they work on things.
Pride in their work.
They grease it properly when they put it back together. Like they pay attention to the details that actually do matter in the long run.
They actually don't want people coming back to them anytime soon with a problem. They want to make sure that that issue in particular, maybe something else will break down, but that one will be good to go for a long time. Whereas dealing with people who are just all about the profit motive, who cares if it breaks down in 6 months? They'll have to come back to me again. I get to charge them again. And there's also the issue of somebody coming out to fix one problem and, oh, you know what? You're gonna need to replace this other thing probably within a few months. So you might as well have me do it now.
Yeah.
It'll probably be a better better benefit if I do it now. You don't want it to break down later and then in some cases, cost more. It could be true.
Yeah, and I've learned like,
how do you trust?
I've learned through doing some repairs, like mechanical repairs on like my car, that you have all these things apart that are part of a main assembly, like a wheel hub and everything else that goes on after that. And it's like when you're in there, it is good to replace that $5 part that, you know, is pretty worn out.
Yeah.
So go ahead and replace that while you're in there.
Because taking it all apart is a lot of effort. I'm already in here. Dude, you want a $5 part? I'll do it, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes, yes, you do want to say, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
But how can you trust them, especially the big companies? Let's say Jiffy Lube or something. You go in there to get your oil change.
Oh, yeah.
They give you this whole whole two-sheet thing of, well, you're going to need to replace this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, you got to be safe. Do it now.
Well, the problem is the way that they pay a lot of these service people. And I know this, at least through my work and through talking to some other service people of, like, the mechanical trade, like, appliance work, like, anything work coming and working on things. There's a lot of them that are strictly commission-based. Like, they're paid a flat fee for the item and then paid a commission on anything above that.
Yeah.
So it kind of, if you're a dishonest person, you're going to be dishonest under that type of pay structure.
And I think even some people who have some kind of moral structure to them, I think even they will be a little bit corrupted.
Yeah.
Especially when times are tough.
When they can't afford to live. And that's where I've always avoided trying to work a job like that, because I don't want to be put in that position to where either I have to forego myself or like screw people over, take advantage of people. And I've always like never wanted to be in that position where I even needed to consider that as like something I needed to do to make ends meet.
Now,
I'd rather, you know, make what I need to live and anything I do above that.
I really feel like this is only even possible in the whole globalized, anonymous, big city type of world. And even just big town, where people don't even know each other. Back in the day, when you had just a local policeman, everybody knew each other, local mechanic, whatever the case may be, that mechanic is not going to screw over the people who he's going to be playing softball with later on the weekend.
Yeah.
Or whose children play, you know, poker with the other, play soccer with the other guys, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
When you know the person, you're much less likely, although it's not unheard of, screw them over. But when you have no idea who this person is, they're just another wallet that walked through the door.
Yeah. And yeah, there's no sense of community when it comes to things like that. That's a neighbor, you know, so to speak.
There are still people that do operate with honor. It's just a different mindset and business model.
Yeah.
Because when I find somebody who will be honest with me, say, you know, you could replace this, but you really don't need to, at least not yet. You know, don't worry about this if you don't have the money. We could always just do it later, you know. Or sometimes they'll do some things for free. That's actually a great business model. Even though they're not going to get a lot of stuff, money up front, I'm going to go back to them.
Yeah.
Because I trust them.
Yeah, that's definitely, like, encouraging when you're dealing with people like that. It's incredible.
It's rare these days, though.
Yeah, it really is. It's really rare to see. And the sad thing, this is what I was thinking of. a lot of those people that are honorable in those like type of experiences, you know, service people, repair people, a lot of them aren't very successful business-wise. Uh-huh. They're not the largest outfit. They don't have the nicest things a lot of times.
Yeah.
And it's because they are so nice, they don't charge what they're worth. And that's a big problem for people like that. And it's like, sometimes you really just need to like...
There's got
to
be a balance.
More, give them more. If like, if what they're charging you is like more than fair and they're, you know, you know that they do good work, like throw them like some more. Like, yeah. I definitely believe in that type of, you went above and beyond, even though you said $100 for an hour of your work was fine, here's $150. Yeah.
The mechanic like, I've gone to, I've found,
did good.
Who I've found to be trustworthy, his place looks like, kind of like a dump almost.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't have any flashiness to it. It's not one of these chain places.
Oh yeah.
It's the one and only.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy, I mean, I talked to him. He's always packing a lip.
Oh yeah.
But I trust him, and he's been good to me, good to the car. Oh, yeah. So keep going back there. But you're right. He probably could have a much better outfit.
If he a lot of them don't really care. Like
as long as he's, you know, but he's able time, to continue like, his.
Yeah, I want to see people like that. This is something I've noticed just dealing with people like that before. Is like, they're not big business minded. They're not going, you know what, I feel like I'm the best. I feel like I'm fair. I feel like I'm honest. I feel like I provide a good service.
Yeah.
I want to be a big company.
I want to be the king of this town.
Smoke all these like greasy, you know, slime ball, like basically salesmen wearing a mechanic's outfit. Like very few people that are like that actually do that. They're like, nah, I just want to keep my shop. I like running my shop. Like,
I've got my car. I've got a little home over there. And
yeah, I'm happy. Good. I'm doing all right. Yeah. Well,
you know, it does seem like some
kind
of the...
Kind of crazy.
The better and even happier people out there, the ones with the bigger families sometimes, are not the ones in the big homes.
Yeah.
They're happier with less. They get by with less.
Yeah,
they even thrive sometimes.
I've met a whole lot of unhappy, very well-off people. I mean, I've been into... Like I was telling Kyle, I've been into a lot of $500,000 homes. I've been into $1 million homes. I've been into $80,000 homes, you know, through work and through the years with different jobs. And, you know, money is definitely not the ticket to success, just alone, you know, wealth alone. But, you know, to me, it should help avoid problems, you know, stress and depression from... Not being able to afford food.
Lack of this Jewish money.
Mm-hmm.
Money inherently isn't evil, but this Jewish money... Lack of this Jewish money causes so much stress in people's lives.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the things that causes them to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And not just drink, but drink crap beer, which makes them feel even worse.
Yeah.
Crap liquor. Because they can't afford anything better, and they're drowning their sorrows. It's a terrible little cycle there.
Terrible cycle.
But, it really is a big problem. Having too much money,
mm-hmm.
it seems like it brings its own stresses, and still, it's never enough.
Never enough.
And you've got more money, more problems.
Uh-huh.
So I think you've got to find that. To quote the great philosopher Biggie Smalls.
Uh-huh.
But you got to find a kind of happy medium there where you don't let money kind of control your actions, control your life. And you don't let the worries about monetary issues kill you inside. Because it gives people ulcers.
Oh,
it keeps them up at night.
Yeah, that's something. I mean, I've had times where I really struggled with that. And, like, I've never really... I can definitely say I've never been rich or wealthy at any point in my life. And so it's, like, you know, something at different points is... Like, kept me from sleeping.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how I'm going to afford this. I don't know how I'm going to do this, and this. And, like, I got to a point where I started to do a little better. And I kind of just, like, I'm not going to worry about that anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not going to just ignore it. And
I'm not going to do anything anymore. No more work for me.
Get a little low in the bank account. But I'm going to swipe the credit card again. Yeah, I never had that. I've always, like, had good credit from the time I started having credit. And tried to pay my debts off and never you know, just because I was approved for a loan for something, like, you know, I took a loan out on a house, like, I could have gone really high. I could have, you know, gone up to probably 150, 200 with a cosigner, some kind of thing.
Give yourself a little castle, why don't you?
Yeah, and it's like, there's no way I could afford that realistically, but they would have approved me for that.
Well, that's how that's the official story about how the housing crisis and the big bailout collapse occurred.
Yeah.
Was people just taking out loans that they could never really afford to pay back to live in these very large houses because they think that's going to equate happiness. And I really think that it's sad that people, once they get money, allow it to really change themselves. It corrupts people. They completely change in so many different ways. And it's great to see when people do have a little bit more financial success, but they remain the same essential person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed there's these people that are like, if they do kind of come from a point of like middle class, lower middle class, up to where they feel like they're doing really well, like financially, like they got a new job that's just double what they were making type of thing. It seems like their mentality changes. They're like, oh, sweet, I made it into the club. See you guys.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. I'm rich now.
I can't deal with you poor friends anymore.
Bye, poor folks. When they were part of like kind of your class financially, they were, like this system's so bad. Like the Federal Reserve, you know, is stealing from us and we got to do something about it. And like, we need a new tax plan or it's kind of interesting seeing that flip when this ain't so bad. Like, I'm actually making it in the system. Like, maybe that is a good thing.
Yeah. I really don't like when people who, either through luck or from kissing ass, or possibly through hard work, get rich and then just look down on everybody else.
Yeah.
And I've never wanted to, well, at least not over the past decade and plus, I've never wanted to look down on working people.
Yeah.
And even, I've always kind of, I never had those internships, the fancy internships, nor did I ever want them.
Yeah.
Even back while I was still indoctrinated with a whole bunch of BS. And I did those kinds of jobs where after I worked at Google, I went and worked manual labor putting up wedding tents for rich people who looked down on me. I didn't care.
Yeah.
I worked with some cool people. I made terrible money. but I wasn't ashamed of myself. I never have been. I graduated from an elite school and then was a pizza delivery driver that summer.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like, this doesn't define who I am. Yeah. It does not give me value or take away my value. What job
what
I am
just
working.
Supposed to like not, oh, I can't work that job. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to forego a job because these are all below me.
I didn't have a trust fund.
So much better off because of that, right?
Yeah.
Like, no money is better than no money when you're, that's too low a position.
Yeah. When I deal with service people, I've mentioned even the guy who pumped my septic tank. I'm going to talk to them like they're humans. And it seems like a lot of people don't.
Oh,
even
yeah.
people who don't have a whole lot of money,
who
live in probably a similar house to the person who's pumping their septic tank,
they'll
look down on these people, won't shake their hands. But I'll go out and do that. These are actual people. I'll talk to them. I'll joke with them. I'll shake their hands. And they seem to really appreciate it. And also, I don't do this selfishly, but they do seem to hook me up. They do seem to help me out whenever they can.
And I've been in situations where, you know, I've made pretty good money considering I'm not, you know, using college education for what I'm doing. And, I mean, there's been situations where I've been to people's houses that were extremely, like, rude and left with the satisfaction of knowing, like, even though they had this, like, attitude of, well, I went to college, like, you're not, you're an idiot, like, because of what you're doing. Like, anybody can do that, right? And I leave with the satisfaction of knowing, like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I make more than that guy does in a year.
Yeah.
I may work more hours for it, but, like, I make more money than you. I'm not, like, lower on the pay scale because I do something that's physical, like, in nature, manual kind of labor. It's, like, just kind of funny that they think, for some reason, that, you know, I'm, like, a minimum wage,
yeah,
like level person or something. It's like, nah, that's not really the case.
Yeah, or plumbers who they make a good.
Oh yeah, plumbers make really good money.
Think about it, this rich person. Oh, I've got this and that and the other.
There's people at plumbing companies with like 5-10 guys that are living in $1 million homes in those nice.
Yeah.
Neighborhoods, like, and they are that well off because of it.
It's because it's if those rich people don't pay up, their shit won't flow.
Yeah, yep. You have that power of like, well, find somebody else. Like that's your only other option, and like, it's pretty.
Oh,
funny.
You up there in your high castle? Surcharge. You don't know how to do anything in your high castle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so as we were talking about the do-it-yourself culture and the kind of balance between doing it yourself or paying an expert to do it, there's got to be a happy medium. If you're just completely incompetent in your house and you have to rely on other people to fix any kind of issue, you're just a moron. You're one of those soft imbeciles, big babies.
Yeah, one thing I have been amazed by is like some people that were well off. That word, like, do-it-yourselfers.
A lot. And like, a lot probably get there
uh-huh.
because they're not just throwing their money around willy-nilly so mm-hmm. they can sit back and relax. I've got some free time. I work a lot. Yeah, but I've got some free time. I want to learn how to do this myself. Because once you learn how to do something, you know how to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a similar problem, oh, I've dealt with this before. I'm sure I can handle this one.
Yeah.
And it's fun learning new things and having the satisfaction of saying, I fixed that myself.
Yeah. And one aspect, like we were talking about earlier, is I feel like with a lot of like these trades and servicing of things, you get a lot of knowledge that applies to how things work. And a lot of people don't understand how much of anything works.
Mm.
Like for me, a lot of computer stuff and networking doesn't, like coding, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I understand like other things, you know, construction or, you know, remodeling.
Moron.
Or, you're like plumbing. You know,
servicing. I live only in the digital world, sir.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, some people that are, I've dealt with some really smart people before that they had no idea like how an air conditioner worked. Like they were mind blown because they're like, I'm a PhD and all this. I like never knew that.
I didn't know that much about how an air conditioner actually works. Yeah, I gotta be honest. I still don't have a great understanding of it, but I'll be honest. I didn't even know, let's say, where a lot of food came from until recently. Yeah. It's still something. I'm a little bit
still, you know, sure, it's a little mysterious. What that really is. Yeah.
Most people probably don't know what a coffee bean, which isn't even a bean, actually looks like. The fruit it comes from. Before it then gets roasted and everything.
Yeah.
Most people might not even know what a beet looks like in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it's pretty incredible how distanced we are from the true nature of something or how something works.
Yeah. Yeah, we're disconnected from it. And, you know, I think as time goes on and we see more and more of like technology being used as like a very intrusive force into like our day-to-day life, people are basically they're pushing forward a system to where people aren't educated on how anything works. They're just told to like push this button or okay, this is your problem, do this. Mm-hmm. They don't tell you why you're doing it, like, or what it's really doing that's making it that's really fixing it. Like, they don't understand what they're doing in the process.
They want the society of specialization,
mm-hmm.
such that you can be an expert, let's say, in just refrigeration. Yeah. You can be an expert in one aspect of technology, whether it's machine code or whether
networking,
it's networking. Python, exactly. Unix. Even just one language of software engineering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who know multiple, but they're pushing more and more for this specialization where once upon a time, people really aspired to be kind of the jack of all trades.
Yeah.
Where you know, maybe not everything about a particular field, a trade, or an object, but you at least had a pretty good idea about how most stuff worked.
Yeah, and like a good example, I think, of what you're talking about as far as jack of all trades is like doing heating and air, for example. I've worked with contractors and remodelers. And they come up with some pretty crazy ideas of what they set in stone as far as they're like, this is our project, this is our plans. And we're going to move this here, we're going to move this there, we're going to move, you know, this duct over here. And it's like, you come out there and look at it and just laugh. You're like, that's not possible. Yeah. Like, why did you think you could do that? And it's because they don't understand, like, how it actually works. And sometimes we fall prone to, like, oh, I didn't realize I can't, like, go through that channel, or it's going to cause a structural issue, or, you know, something like that. But knowing when you work with people that know more than just their specialized field, I feel like that's a really important thing, that if you're going to be, like, a network engineer, you should have a basic understanding of, like, how an operating system works. Like, some more than just that. So you can... It's really good for problems.
So you know how things work together.
Yeah. So you could, like, hey, I kind of noticed something. I'm not really sure about it. Can you look into it? Like, I remember seeing something about this, and that's your specialty. Just, like, look here. And, oh, okay, you know, that guy looks at it and finds out, yeah, there is a problem with it. But if nobody knows anything but their own specialized field, a lot of times there's a lot of time wasted where something gets missed along the supply chain that could have been corrected earlier.
Let's talk about one of the hurdles that stands in the way of people being able to inexpensively fix their problems, to troubleshoot and all the rest. All of the different options, this free market capitalism where you've got 6 million different products that supposedly do the same thing. And, you know, some of those will be the lower end ones. So many different options. There's many in the medium and many in the high end.
Yeah.
Slight little variations. All of these options, each with their own specialized little parts that will only work within that model. The year, the year before for that same exact machine? No, yeah, totally,
totally different. None of the connections are the same. Like, the shape, style, locking mechanism. Like, I mean, when you really think about all the products you've ever touched that go together in a certain way, or like, why do they constantly change the way everything is? Like, things that don't matter, like plugs, connectors.
You know, even just all the like different kinds of nuts and bolts, okay? Why not have basically small, medium, and large?
For the most part,
you know, for most things. Yeah, I can understand where you're going to need some other variations. But how easy would it be when all you got to do, oh, that's a medium. I'll get a medium, medium nut. I lost one of those.
Yeah.
You know, same kind of, you know, similar threading. Now,
which this, there is somewhat there some is standards some on that.
Yes.
But, like, when it comes to, especially electronics, which is most of the like, you know, items like this, are electronics, to where, you know, we were talking about phone chargers, how they used to be, and that's one thing that did get better with the standardization of going to micro USB.
Yes.
For some reason, iPhones can use a lightning cable. I don't understand that. Like, why are they able to have a different cord, but everybody else has to be the same?
I don't know, but I always hated when I had an iPhone, how I'd get one of these, not even cheap, charging cords, you know, from a store, 10-15 bucks depending on the length of it, and then maybe after a month or two of using it, the iPhone would say, oh, your iPhone doesn't recognize this this cord, so it won't even charge. It obviously could charge, it's sending juice to it, but I refuse, no, my software says no, don't recognize this, I won't charge.
But we kind of use that as an example of, like, why, you know, why change something unless there's something wrong with it? So, like, instead of trying to make things different, why don't we as a nation try to make something that is the best and then mass produce that? Like, why do we need all this generic, like, multiple brands that are owned by other brands that are owned by other brands?
It's by the same company.
It's like three competing brands
owned by the same company. Yeah.
Like, appliances, electronics are huge for this, where they all have, like, their own sub-brands. And, like, oh, you want to go generic? Well, we got a brand for that. Like, oh, you don't like that one? Well, we got another one that's generic.
A lot of car companies, too.
Yeah.
And it would be so much easier if it was just basically plug and play. You could easily switch out different components.
Modifiable.
Because they're also standardized.
Google was planning a smartphone years ago that had detachable... Almost everything was detachable and replaceable. Like, you could put If they came out with a better camera, you could swap it out and like lock it into the phone.
This would reduce digital, the electronic waste.
Yeah, what greatly. Happened to that?
Well, totally. All the electronic waste got donated to Africa, yeah, where it's just exactly. in massive toxic mounds.
Oh, it's so incredible now, when you really think about all
but,
of this.
But standardization is seen as that's fascistic, oh, yeah. or that's just
you're taking away people's choices. Yeah, it's like choices for what? Crap. Like,
yeah. Ayn Rand capitalism does not agree with what you're saying.
Oh there. Yeah, it's totally against that. Like. And that's my problem. Like, I think people that believe in capitalism, these like diehard capitalists, like they think of capitalism as if I want to go out and start a business and sell something that I think is great, that I think other people will think is great, that they will buy, then I should be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's nobody's saying that that's a bad thing, but when it becomes bad is when it's done in the way that they're doing it now, where they're just trying to milk every last dollar out of everybody for cheap crap that's not made here, that's not made with any pride, that's not made to last, or made in such a way that they plan on you. A lot of things are sealed now. Like, you can't. Yeah. Once they finish infamous. It, like, it's glued together.
If you take it apart, your warranty's void.
Warranty's void.
Wait, I thought I owned this thing.
Yeah,
I can't
exactly.
get into it. I can't alter the software.
Fix my own product that I paid money for.
Now,
yeah.
I understand why people under this government, in this world, would say, I don't want the government regulating anything. But just imagine if we actually had a legitimate government, not run by Jews, but run by our own people.
Exactly.
Who were looking out for our best interests, and were trying to stop these predatory capitalists from, or even the monopolies, from just milking us for everything we're worth.
Yeah.
Just exploiting us at every turn, poisoning us.
There's no, within the business world, within the political world, there's nobody that is going into it and doing things with the intentions of actually helping American people. Mm-hmm. Like, just to be general about it. Like, they do not care.
It's self-interest.
It's all self-interest.
Oftentimes, and most of the time, doctors, too.
Yeah.
They're not going there. I want to help people. Yeah. That's
I mean, you could go down the list. Like,
it's an investment, but it's very much like the servicemen, too, with troubleshooting, diagnostics, and everything, and then offering solutions and offering other solutions. Yep. And it's...
I'd say this is the problem with that, and the cause for the culture of it to be that way, is nobody is rewarded for doing good things for people.
Yeah.
Like, and now sometimes, like, you have to worry about, like, news stories about men are afraid to give women CPR because they're afraid they'll be charged or, like, accused of sexual assault.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, doing a good thing now is the most punished thing that you can do.
Have you seen the stories about feeding the homeless where cops will be pouring bleach on the food?
Yeah.
Oh, because you have to go through our safety standards. You know, this was not approved.
Oh, yeah.
It goes along with the codes and the regulations, impossible and expensive for people to meet. It's just a money extortion scheme. It's not to actually protect us, to make us safer.
So you basically, like, with a lot of these codes and regulations, which I'll say there are some that are very good that I believe in, that are reasonable, but a lot of your, like, code enforcement, whether it's like building inspections, especially something that I have had a lot of experience with, they're obviously, I mean, in my area, at least I can speak to with building inspections, mechanical, electrical, engineers, structural, these people are taking bribes. Like, there's no doubt about it. And they're running protection for larger businesses in the area. I've seen multiple examples of this where, you know, point blank, people are in violation and they're getting approved. And it's like, there's no way that there's not some money or something changing hands there. So they don't have your best interests. You know, the different regulations that are being put forth, or the FDA, like, supposedly that's supposed to prevent these dangerous, harmful drugs from damaging people. Like, they're going to inspect and test. Yeah. And, like, they're doing the same thing. They're taking bribes. They're patting each other's backs and wallets.
These organizations get bigger each and every year, and yet people get sicker. The products get more toxic. If they were really doing their jobs, would we have all of these epidemics? Would we have obesity, opioids, etc.?
If things were as good as they act like they are, then why do they suck so much? Right. Like, that's where I'm at. I'm like, you look around, go to a city, and just stand there for about 10 minutes and look around and go, is this the best thing that's ever happened in this world? Yeah. Like, just honestly ask yourself that question. Like, is this really good? Is this future good? Is it better than it was 10 years ago, 20? Like, just go down the list.
With some of the solutions, just a few that we've found for our own lives, if we were to implement them across the country, I really do think some of these, just in terms of even gardening techniques.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of replacing opioid abuse and alcohol abuse with kratom, getting more people to try that.
Yeah,
just small things like that. We've talked about quite a few on our shows where we think, or even just diet change.
Yeah,
small things like this. If we were to get more people on board with that, I really do think we'd start to see the emergence of a better future. But until that kind of thing happens, we're just headed down the tubes.
Yeah,
but it would be very easy if you had the government apparatus at your disposal to enact very positive changes in no time at all. Even if
it's just encouragement. I mean, there's no encouragement in our government or in our, if you're a capitalist, capitalists think that business drives practically everything, that politics doesn't really do it. It's really the business that pushes it. And I kind of agree with that, because, I mean, look at Hollywood, look at Big Pharma. They really are the ones that are paying for the reality that we have.
The salaries of the politicians are so meager compared to what they can get from these different private interests.
Yeah, they're basically an arm. You know, the government's just their political, that's their arm that they control.
The money masters.
To do what they do. But, like, there's no encouragement to be healthy, to be a good person,
all these philanthropists? Miriam Edelson, Sheldon Adelson's wife, she got the Freedom Award under Trump for her philanthropy.
Oh, wow.
So when there are different things that are supposedly rewarded by the government, for being charitable acts, it's always, always a huge scheme, a scam. Oh, yeah. Where, a lot of these charities, the foundations, the fundraisers they have through all these supermarkets, so very little of that goes to anybody who's actually in need. It's all about
more
advertising,
padding
the pockets of the executives of this nonprofit.
And I wonder how many, because there's a lot of these campaigns I see that just seem really, really heavy on advertising. More so than, anything.
Oh, yeah.
And is it family members? Is it friends? Or do they have some ownership of these advertising companies? That's a good racket to run, because it's a whole lot harder to trace.
Yeah.
And, some of these projects seem...
So good and so helpful. Oh, what good, kind, caring people who are taking in so much money every year. And nothing ever happens from all the cancer research and everything.
Yeah, I love these people that are pulling in $200,000, $150,000 a year to, say that rich people are ruining the world. that type of activist.
We are almost out of time. We got just a few more minutes left here. What I wanted to discuss was just how a lot of these problems would be solved if we actually had community, real community. Yeah. And communal living, where we didn't have, and this is not communistic, but where we did not have to all just individually own huge amounts of tools, expensive tools. If we were able to pool our resources to have a huge workshop where, maybe you do need it just for yourself. You could rent that, not rent out, but put yourself down on the calendar. I need it this time for such and such a project. And where you could barter your services with people who know what they're doing. And say, I've got to move, or I've got to do some work on my roof. Anybody wants to help out, I'll come help you out with your project next week. And we'd be able to really efficiently, help each other out.
Yeah,
not even just share our resources, but we'd be able to help each other.
Yeah. But nowadays, it's become, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world. You know, you have to better screw the next guy, because if not, he's going to screw
you. I think it kills people inside, though. I think people really feel good when they help each other. They have that that drive to want to be helpful and to be helped. They like smiling at each other. But the whole society, as you've said, is geared towards just destroying that instinct and de-incentivizing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you got the people that just, like, get off on, like, telling everybody how I help these people, and, you know, we, you know, did a mission trip here, or we, you know, we did this for this person. I gave a homeless guy $10, and he thanked me so much for it, and it's just kind of, just for attention.
Hi there. We're almost done, sir.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to say thank you so much for doing this show here with me tonight. We didn't get to cover all the topics.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so hard to trust people in the society because of the whole structure that's been set up that gets us to think that everybody's trying to exploit us. User reviews, something I found useful, but as you've mentioned to me, not always very trustworthy.
Yeah.
This oftentimes I do look through them and find some good information, but people get paid. People get those products themselves to then review them, and they obviously, these companies will do everything they can to make sure they got a, you know, 5-star review.
Oh yeah.
They organize campaigns.
Review rigging is a big problem. Like, it was a lot. Yeah.
It got a bunch of 1-star reviews from a certain tribe.
Oh yeah.
And that brought down the rating. Otherwise it would have been 9 point something and would have been listed very high in the documentary section or whatever, wherever it
was
is.
Was it Rotten Tomatoes? Was that where that was listed? IMDb. Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing it when it was like up there in the star rating and there was quite a few, and it seemed like all on that side, the positive was organic reviews. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, it was like this onslaught of hundreds.
Absolutely fake, awful. Like, completely fake.
All new accounts, like, just registered a day ago, you know, or that day, doing the reviews. It's a big thing on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes of people, you know, rigging the reviews. Like, Black Panther was accused of doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah, they were getting rid of any negative reviews of that. You couldn't leave one because it would be inherently racist to give Black Panther a negative review. I want people out there to give good reviews to this show. Go into the comment section. We don't have a star system, but do give it 5 stars however you can.
Yeah.
Share it around. Go visit Heathen Herbs. People have actually had good reviews of that. We don't pay them for that. We appreciate that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Being honest, it is good stuff. Give it a try. At least give it a try.
And here's your $20. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thanks to the supporters. And I'll be back with you again soon.
All right.
A slave to the capitalist system, which is ruled by the global elite. What happened to the individual? What happened to working class white? The fed this head with propaganda.
We are taught almost nothing about South Africa in Western schools, other than that there was an evil apartheid government of white racists who oppressed everyone until the great Saint Nelson Mandela came along. Now you can learn the real history of exploration, conflict, concentration camps for the Boers, Jewish-funded black terrorism, Winnie Mandela and her necklacing, rampant murder and rape under the ANC, the so-called squatter camps, how the Rainbow Nation is a blueprint for what's to come for whites worldwide, and so much more. Between Heaven and Hell, the true story of whites in South Africa by Sinead McCarthy. Free to watch at whitesouthafrica.com.
The green ball glistening gold.